first, we've got on the line a director of public affairs for the NRA, for the National Rifle Association, Andrew Arulanundam. And in full disclosure, I know Andrew. I mean, you know, we're not close friends. I don't think he's holding a file of incriminating information on me. But I know he and his family and a terrific fellow. And I thought at this time, more than ever, Andrew, let's get you on and let's you know, try to talk some sense about what's taking place right now. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Where you at right now?
I'm right in the belly of the beast in Washington, D.C., a few blocks from the Capitol.
Oh, my. All right. Let's you know, I there's so many ways we can take this discussion. But I suppose if we frame it first, if you could, in short order, say, look, here's the NRA's position on the current gun control discussion that's resulted from the sad tragedy in Newtown. If you could enunciate, here's our position. And then let's kind of talk a little about where you think this whole effort up on Capitol Hill may end up.
Thanks, Mike. I mean, basically where we are right now is NRA wants programs that will produce results. And the first thing we need to do is we need to protect our children. That's why we came and we proposed a very sensible plan that a lot of municipalities and states are looking at right now, and that is to put an armed police officer in every school in America. At that critical moment when something bad happens, the only thing that's going to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. I know it sounds cliche, but if you think about it, instant responders are almost always better than first responders, despite the best intentions of the first responders. The second thing we need to do is we need to make sure that states start submitting information of all those people who are violently, who are predisposed to violence and who have some kind of existing mental disorder. All those records need to be included in the National Instant Check System, and we need to make sure that those people don't have access to firearms. The third thing that needs to happen is we need to make sure that people who break existing firearms laws, that they are arrested, prosecuted, and punished. You know, there's really no need for further gun control laws or gun laws because we're not enforcing the laws that we have on the book right now. And until and unless we start enforcing those laws, it makes no sense to talk about any future law.
Number one on that list of laws that you feel you know we're not taking seriously or we're not enforcing currently.
You know, where do we begin? I mean, if you look at the New York Times today, there's a story about 80,000 people who were denied when they went to try and buy a firearm from an FFL. They were denied. And out of those 80,000 people, there were only 44 follow-ups. That means 80,000 people were denied. 44 of those 80,000 people did not get a follow-up visit from ATF or from any law enforcement. I mean, these are people who are disqualified for a variety of reasons, whether they have a criminal record or whether they were flagged as someone who has some kind of a mental disorder and shouldn't have access to firearms. Now, why isn't there follow-up? And I think it would be a very effective means of sending a message and discouraging other people who shouldn't have access to firearms. If the minute you're flagged and you cannot buy a firearm, law enforcement is at your door knocking, saying, "What were you doing? Why were you trying to buy a firearm?"
Mm-hmm. Agreed on that point. Well, let me ask you this though. Given the way that Washington works, and you know this better than most because of your business and your proximity to Capitol Hill, and their tendency after an outrage or after something emotive such as this tragedy in Newtown, their tendency to try to rush into regulation. Given the frenzy, the speed, and the aggressiveness with which the pro gun control lobby seems to be moving. If the NRA wants to be seen as and wants to be sort of proactive in looking for a proper response to what happened in Newtown. What is your position? How do you sit at the table in the current environment, hold the line, hold your position, and remain in sort of the public view relevant to the conversation?
Well, it's a very hard job to do that. A lot of people are moving forward, and they're moving forward with emotion, and some people are moving forward not just with emotion, but also with political opportunism in mind. We have to try and educate lawmakers and make them think logically about what they are proposing and the potential impacts. You know, people forget that we had for 10 years we had a semi-auto ban under the Clinton administration from 94 to 2004. We also had a clip ban during that same time period. Various studies conducted by the Clinton Justice Department found that the ban was ineffective. In fact, right in the midst of the ban in 1999, we had Columbine, one of the deadliest and most tragic incidents to ever occur. It occurred right during the middle of the semi-auto ban. And a lot of people gloss over that fact. I mean, the main reason gun control laws fail is because they require the cooperation of two very unlikely sources. One, that's the criminal, and two, that's, you know, people who are basically crazy.
Is it fair to say that as a result of the conversations that are taking place right now in Washington, that membership in the NRA as well as gun sales have been soaring?
Yeah, membership is soaring. People are coming out of the woodwork and saying, you know, we cannot afford to lose this freedom, and you guys need to fight this. You know, you are our best hope to make sure that we have this freedom for the next generation. And, you know, our president, NRA president, David Keene, was on CNN yesterday, he was asked by one of the hosts over there, you know, whether NRA was trying to exploit all this to try and sell guns. And he very correctly responded, look, there are two people in this country who are responsible for the increase in gun sales, and their names are Barack Obama and Dianne Feinstein. Because anytime they start talking about gun bans, people pay attention, and that's why people are going out and buying guns. NRA is not telling them to go buy guns. NRA is telling them to, hey, this is coming down the pike. You need to be focused. You need to call your senators. You need to call your members of Congress. There's going to be a lot of action at the state level. You need to call your state legislators, and you need to call your governors. That's what we're doing. We want to make sure that this freedom is around for future generations.
Let's talk just briefly about background checks, gun checks, waiting period. That's been thrown out there as one point that possibly could be put on the table and discussed by Joe Biden, the vice president's panel. What are your thoughts?
Well, it is disingenuous to suggest that, you know, everyone talks about this gun show so-called loophole. It's disingenuous to suggest that there is no background checks that occur at gun shows. That is completely wrong. Any transaction, whether it occurs at a gun show, whether it occurs at a big firearms retailer like Walmart or a storefront, or even an FFL who operates from his home. If you are an FFL, if you hold a federal firearms license as an FFL, every transaction you undertake has to go through the National Instant Check System. No ifs, ands, or buts. There are a small number of private sales, and these are primarily estate sales where someone passes on and no one in the family either shoots or hunts and they want to get rid of two or three firearms. They go to a gun show and they try to sell it over there. And most often than not, those guns are often purchased by an FFL. And so the cycle of tracking begins once again. The other thing, a quick statistic over here, based on a Department of Justice, a Bureau of Justice statistics survey, it said less than 2% of firearms used in crimes originated from gun shows. A lot of them originate from stolen property or from the black market.
Right. There's an inability sometimes, I think, Andrew. We're talking to Andrew Rillinundum, the Director of Public Affairs for the NRA. There's an inability, particularly when we're talking about weapons, gun control, to have a non-emotive, a rational discussion really about anything. And I mean, you know, in fairness, that's on both sides, right? I mean, it quickly devolves into discussion. So I very much appreciate you taking the time to be with us and to talk about this. Do you think that there's also, you know, when we're talking about background checks, there's this talk, it kind of gets folded into the same subject of a national database that would be more robust, more comprehensive. Your thoughts?
You know, NRA would oppose any form of gun registry for law-abiding gun owners. We care about the law-abiding people. If you want to keep a registry of the bad guys, do it for as long as you want. But there is no reason for the government to keep a database of law-abiding gun owners.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're going to get a number of calls here following up on this conversation, Andrew. And again, Andrew Rillinundum, the Director of Public Affairs, the NRA. Listen, I thank you for taking the time out. I know you're got a very, very chaotic schedule right now. But all the best and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the opportunity.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.